Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity?
Hi, welcome to the special Sports Kudzu Vine, also known as the Southern Sports Universe. I'm your host of both shows, David McLaughlin, and joining me as he always did on the Southern Sports Universe and a time or two on the Kudzu Vine, Mike Tierney.
Good day, Dave. Long time no talk.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's been a while since I did one of these, but the reason we're doing this is kind of a one topic special, and we're doing it on this wild card Saturday, although we don't want to date the show too much because you can probably listen to this in a few days and it will still be fresh, like podcasts hopefully are. But that story is the Atlanta Falcons head coaching job, if you will. And first off, Mike Smith got fired. I think he really in some ways got fired Sunday, be it before or after the game, but definitely officially got fired on Monday with a lengthy press conference to follow. But my question to you, Mike, is how much of the firing was football and how much was business, if you want to do out of 100% or however you want to answer that question?
I would say probably 70-30 football, but that 30% is significant, David. As you point out, if a new stadium were not being built as we speak and if personal seat licenses were going to be required of season ticket holders, then I think there's a chance that Smith would have gotten another year. I think the last 2 years soured Arthur Blank, especially when they got so close to the Super Bowl. It was clearly a step back. So football was a big part of it, but I think that stadium going up makes the business factor significant as well.
Yes. Well, you know, we'll get into Arthur Blank and his decision making, but he wasn't the owner back in, I guess it was 1982. When Rankin Smith, the former owner, decided to fire Lehman Bennett, the most successful coach up until that time in franchise history, because he kind of thought Lehman Bennett had done some good things, but the franchise had stagnated. How much does this firing kind of echo the Lehman Bennett firing?
Well, I think it did a lot. And I think, when a coach takes a team to the doorstep of a championship, then he becomes on the hot seat because the owner is going to expect him to return the team to that lofty perch, if not exceed it. You know, we kind of saw it with the Braves a little bit, not in terms of the fate of the manager, but the team got so close to World Series, 1-1, but then when they took a step back, continued to play winning baseball, but not getting close to a title, then people started to lose interest. And I think that is a concern of Blank here, and it echoes back to the period you're speaking of earlier with Lehman Bennett. You get close, and then you take a step back, and as a coach, you might be in more trouble than if you were playing 500 ball every year.
Yes, I guess expectations. Mike Smith rose those further. Well, let's kind of finish up with Mike Smith before we get on to the new coaches. He's been fired or parted ways or, you know, best wishes and future endeavors, whatever people like to say. Have you heard his name come up for any head coaching opportunities, media opportunities, high-profile defensive coordinator opportunities, or is he going to get kind of the year off, if you will?
I think if he wants to, he can coach on defense at some with some franchise next year. I haven't really heard his name linked because not a whole lot of coordinator positions have come open yet, and most of the coaches in the head coaching mix seem to be coordinators to this point. So I'm sure. Some of these guys definitely are going to get jobs. In fact, there's two defensive coordinators that the Falcons are talking to at least. So I think if Smith wants to coach on a staff, I think he can. He can certainly take a year off if he chooses to. I think one thing, David, about Mike Smith is he's kind of a low ego guy relative to others in this business, and I can really envision him taking orders from a head coach after giving orders for seven seasons. Some guys who were head coach got fired or left and tried to be an assistant. It quite often did not work out. But I think with Mike Smith, given his personality, that it will someplace.
Okay. Well, there was one more part of this. It's people thought, well, if you want to fire Smith, that's one thing, but he didn't pick the groceries, to use the old Bill Parcells line. Thomas Dimitroff did. Were you surprised that Thomas Dimitroff retained his job and Smith got fired?
A little bit, yes. If you told me only one's going to get fired, guess who it will be? I would have guessed Smith. But I kind of thought there was a good chance Thomas would go as well. I think he is pretty loyal to Blank, and I think he does Blank's bidding. So I think that helped him to some degree. And I also think that, and Blank knows this, and Thomas actually alluded to it early this week without throwing Mike Smith under the bus, although some people say that he did, that personnel decisions were pretty collaborative on the Falcons, and Smith had a good bit of say in them. So to blame personnel problems entirely on Thomas is probably a little bit unfair because Smith had a hand in that as well. So that dynamic may have saved Thomas as well as I think his loyalty to Blank.
Yes, and I guess some of that may have come out maybe even after the press conference, but the press conference. I noticed right off the bat, Arthur Blank was very testy with the media, and then there's been some criticism. One of your former colleagues, Jeff Schultz, and I guess the article he wrote on Sunday night, I mean, I actually saw it before I got home from the game Sunday. Does Arthur Blank seem to be a little more contentious with the local media than he has been in the past?
I think so. I think one telling factor or scene at Sunday's game, and I was there, the loss to Carolina. Arthur generally comes into Mike Smith's post-game press conference by himself, and his presence is definitely noticeable there, but he stands off to the side. This Sunday, he came in, and I'm not sure he came into the room, but he walked to the press conference with family members in tow, and a couple of reporters doing their job approached him to ask the pertinent questions, and Blank kind of fended them off, saying, "I'm with my family, please respect that." And I thought that was kind of an unprofessional way to handle it. You know, if you don't want to talk to the media, fine, but don't use your family as cover. He also jumped on a public relations person at the press conference for not, quote, controlling the media or their questions. So I think, you know, there's probably been a buildup of criticism and maybe for Arthur it went over the top and he has reacted this way. But I thought it was uncharacteristic of him to act this way, and I just thought it was beneath him. He also took criticism. The ESPN first reported Sunday about a search firm being hired for the new coach, and this was before Smith had been fired. And I think there is a belief among some local media members that Blank or his aides were the source of that story. And I think they felt like if that were true, then it was kind of a cheap shot towards Smith. And I know shouldn't put words into Jeff Schultz's mouth, but I believe he wrote that he felt that way. And I think others did too. So, you know, the criticism of Blank became pretty pointed at that point, and I think Blank may have reacted to that.
Do you think part of this reaction on Arthur Blank's part has come as a part of the little bit of guilt? You know, you said it was 70-30. Maybe knowing that it's not 100, which it, you know, optimally should be a football decision, the fact that it might be 30% business, that he feels a little guilt, and that's why he's kind of jumping on his media people and other things.
Well, you know, the Blank and the team are in a pretty dicey spot right now. I think they are prepared to release the information on the personal seat licenses, how much folks are going to have to pony up to buy tickets now. And I suspect had the team done well this year and were surging into the playoffs, we might have gotten that announcement by now. Because it's going to not be received very well. So you want to announce bad news if you can control it at positive time. And but now, with the season ending as badly as it did, they are unable, I think, in their minds to release that information at this time. So when do you release it? And as we discuss further about the new coach, I think it could be timed to that. But I think they were hoping to release that ticket information at a time where it would have been more easily digested by fans than it's probably going to be now.
Yeah, just a little side question on PSLs. You know the Atlanta sports market. How well are those going to do, that concept do in Atlanta, knowing that even though it's one of the top 10 markets, it doesn't have the loyal fan base that other cities have, probably because of the transient nature of the city?
I think it's going to be received overall very badly. A couple of years ago, I sort of walked around groups of tailgaters outside a Falcon game shortly after the stadium deal was announced and the PSLs were going to become a part of it. And I asked folks, are you aware of PSLs? Do you know what they are? And are you going to be willing to pay them? And I would say definitely the majority of folks I talked to, and probably a significant majority, either didn't know about them or knew about them and said, I'm not going to pay that, or I'm going to have to think twice about paying it. Interestingly, the minority group that was aware of it and that seemed somewhat acceptable tended to be boosters of their university that they attended. Because, Dave, as you know, to go to Tech and Georgia games, et cetera, you need to contribute a certain amount to the booster club prior to getting at least choice season tickets. So folks who do that, they're not crazy about PSLs, but they understand the concept and the reason. So I think they will be more amenable to pay than others. But I think the majority, as you say, transit population, folks in Atlanta, they switch from one sport to another quite a bit. They're not necessarily locked into one team. So I think whenever it's announced, I think the Falcons should be bracing for a pretty negative reaction overall.
Yes, that'd be interesting to watch. Well, I would kind of be more in the rearview mirror. Let's go and look through the windshield. Looking forward, there's been a lot of candidates mentioned. I can go candidate by candidate. But, Mike, if you had to pick what you know right now, let's discuss your candidate number one.
Well, David, the latest I have read is that the Falcons have received permission to speak to 5 coordinators. And very quickly, they are on the offensive side, Adam Gase of Denver, Josh McDaniels of New England, and Terrell Austin of Detroit. 2 defensive coordinators as well, Dan Quinn of Seattle, Todd Bowles of Arizona.
Austin defensive coordinator? For the Lions, Austin's the defensive coordinator. Lombardi's the offensive coordinator, which I actually could see in one interview, both those gentlemen.
Okay. I probably stand corrected. I guess I wrote that down wrong, and certainly that makes sense. Probably the Lions offensive coordinator would not be in great demand now. So I stand corrected. 3 defensive coordinators and 2 offensive coordinators in the mix. And then you have, as far as we know, 2 former head coaches, Rex Ryan of the Jets and Doug Marrone of the Bills. It has been reported that they have received permission or have scheduled interviews with those two guys. I think the Ryan interview has been confirmed to some degree more than Doug. And so right now, I think those are the primary seven candidates.
Okay. Mike, I can name one, and you can go through them. And I don't mind telling you, if I had to hire based on what I know, and I don't have all the information that the Falcons front office and Korn Ferry, the recruitment firm, and everybody have, but I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm interested so far in Dan Quinn. What do you think of that assessment?
Well, you can't argue with the work he's done with the Seahawks, so it would be difficult to say that was a bad hire. He's worked with one of the best, Pete Carroll, so I think that would make sense. Regarding defensive coordinators, it is interesting that NFL owners have a tendency when they fire a guy who's associated with one side of the ball, then they tend to go in the other direction. Mike Smith, a defensive guy. And so I think, the tendency will be for Blank to look toward offense. That doesn't mean that's how it's going to wind up. But we tend to see that more often than not. I'm really not sure why that is. It's a question probably for some sports psychiatrist. If Quinn doesn't get the offer or one of these other DCs, then I think that could be a factor.
Okay. Well, let's go to some of the two former head coaches and look at them. Rex Ryan's probably the biggest personality of the list. Is that a positive or a negative for him in getting the Atlanta job?
Well, he interviewed here before, and reports indicated that Blank thought very highly of him. So that would serve him well. They must know each other from that interview, so it's not like Ryan's going to have to come in and sell himself. I think the question with Ryan is his record with the Jets, and not just his one-loss record, but how he handled things. And he, too, is a defensive guy. So we talk about a business decision with Mike Smith. Will the new hire also be, to some degree, a business decision? And I think the answer is very possibly yes. If you're going to sell PSLs and if you're going to try to get people to spend more money on tickets than they've been used to, then you might be inclined to hire a household name as a head coach, and certainly Rex Ryan is right up at the top of the list.
Okay, let's go to Doug Marrone. I understand why the guy left. He said, if you say, look, we'll pay you your full salary and you can go work somewhere else and make that salary again for doing the same job, most people would have to make that business decision. But does that make him this hot candidate? I don't know what his 2 years in Buffalo are that exciting to prospective franchises.
Well, it is, to me, really risky to walk away from one of 32 of the primo jobs in football unless you have a pretty good idea you're going to get hired somewhere else. So I have to believe that Marrone's agent has scouted around enough and evaluated the situation to where they are pretty confident he's going to get hired someplace. And I think I have read where he has at least interest from at least three different teams. So is he a good coach? I don't know. I mean, they had a pretty good year this year with an unsettled quarterback situation. I'm not clear with E.J. Manuel, whom they drafted, I think it was last year. He was new on the job. I don't know if he had a lot of say in that or if that was a draft pick by the personnel folks. So he might be looking at the Bills situation and thinking, is E.J. Manuel my guy? I'm not sure I can go real far from him with him. And that may have been another reason why he walked away from that job. But he's got to feel like he's going to land someplace, and why not the Falcons?
Okay, well, let's continue to talk about some of these offensive coordinators. Since you made the point of people kind of like to switch sides of the ball, if you will, and I think I've heard that track record too. Adam Gase, 36 years old, probably about the same age, if not younger, than Peyton Manning. I would think most football observers would say that Peyton Manning is the smartest guy in the offensive meeting. Can you trust hiring Adam Gase and say, hey, look what he's done with Denver, when Peyton Manning's probably going to get the lion's share of the credit in that situation?
That's a good point. I'm sure Gase gives Peyton more rope probably than any quarterback in the league gets. But I've seen Manning speak very highly of him. And the one thing Denver does well, and it's not just Gase, but the guys before him, they do a great job of finding and developing unsung running backs. That's sort of, to me, the trademark of that franchise is they never seem to pick a running back high, but they always figure out a way to work these guys into their system, Anderson being the latest one, a sensational player this year. So, how much of it's Peyton, how much is Gase is hard to say, but let's be honest, Manning doesn't have a cannon of an arm by any stretch of the imagination. So Gase surely has had some input on making the Broncos offense as effective as any in the league without a big arm guy at quarterback.
Yes, well, it's kind of staying in Denver, but in some ways New England. Josh McDaniels, he has the experience in Denver. On the field, they were successful, but it sounds like that there was some dysfunction. Now, he's a little older, you hopefully say, a little wiser. Is the Denver experience going to really impact heavily on the decision, or do you think they'll look more at New England and him working with Belichick in both stints?
Well, I don't think the Denver thing went that well with him. I think it was from what I gather more organizational that McDaniels just was not ready at that time to oversee a program. Another young guy. You know what it may come down to here, David, is whether Belichick recommends him, and I think Bill usually does that with his assistants. He's got a family of former aides scattered about the league, and also I guess we could ask the same question with McDaniels working with Brady as Gase working with Manning. Tom Brady, I'm sure, has a lot of liberty and say on how the Patriots offense is run. So how much of it was Brady and how much of it was McDaniels?
Yes, I mean, that's a good point. Last time that Arthur Blank was – well, not the last time. One of the last times Arthur Blank was in this situation, he kind of hired a dark horse college candidate. And a lot of teams have done this. Chip Kelly with the Eagles and a lot of the places, Bill O'Brien. But this year, not only in the Falcons situation, but in a lot of situations, college coaches are not coming up. Why is this year not the year for that?
That's a good question. And I wonder if one is that college coaches are getting paid a ridiculous amount of money now. So it used to be you could probably swoop through the colleges and grab the top guys, you know, like Saban. They would get double their salary by moving to the NFL, but you don't have that anymore. And Harbaugh at Michigan has raised the bar even more. He's getting a reported average of $8 million a year. So I don't think the top college guys have the financial incentive to jump anymore. And I think also, too, I mean, it might be a lifestyle thing. The NFL is probably more of a year-round job than colleges is, if you take the recruiting aspect out. But when the off-season hits in college, those guys kind of wind down. But in the NFL, particularly with the draft and the combine. I think it's a greater demand on your time year round. So that's probably a factor as well. And probably the last factor is you just had some of these top college guys who have missed when they've worked the pros. I mean, Saban was far from a disaster at Miami, but he's clearly better suited to college. So I think those factors are probably all coming into play.
Okay, closing question. I kind of tried to ask you this earlier, but now that you've talked about them, who's your front runner or who would you hire? Give us some insight.
Well, I would, from a football perspective, I would not go with Ryan. I would go with one of these coordinators, and they're all really highly qualified. So it's difficult for me to pick out one. But I think if you look at the work that any of those guys do, I mean, we're talking about the Denver and New England offense, two of the tops in the league. We're talking about Seattle, Arizona, and Detroit defense, three of the tops in the league. So it's hard for me to pick out one. I may let you pick out one. But let me say this. An acquaintance of mine has posted odds on who the Falcons are most likely to hire, and I'll tell you who his top three are. Number one, at odds of 3-1, Rex Ryan. Number two, at odds of 4-1, Doug Marrone. And number three, at odds of 8-1, Dan Quinn, the Seattle defensive coordinator. So that is an expert's top three picks based on probability. But
well, that's interesting. Like I said, I think if what I know, Dan Quinn would be my number one choice. Now, of course, when you sit in interviews, you learn stuff that you don't know, and that's any walk of life, not just coaching, any job. So it's hard to say without actually being able to sit in and get a sense of everything who it would be at the end, but that's just on the limited information I have. Well, Mike, we know you write for organizations across the world. Where are some places people could read some of your recent work?
Mostly the New York Times. David, I kind of wrote a Falcons postmortem in the Times on Monday. I had a Cleveland Cavaliers story and their troubles that appeared Wednesday. And coming up, perhaps in the Monday paper, is an update on the Hawks situation with their ownership and general manager and how they have sort of defied expectations, although not mine, but the public's expectations on having a great season. So that will be my next story coming up in a few days.
All right. Well, Mike, this was a good time. We may end up doing this again sooner than later on a different topic. We may be here at Kudzu Vines podcast. We may get our old spot back at Southern Sports Universe, but we'll let everybody know about it through Twitter or Facebook or however else we can communicate with folks. But it's been a good show.
Sounds great, David. Good chatting with you.
See you, Mike.